1974, 20th of November, Miami Beach. A news report.
On the morning of November the 20th, John Stonehouse, British MP, went for lunch with some people from the First National Bank of Miami to arrange a business deal between one of his companies and the bank. After that, Mr. Stonehouse came back to the Fontainebleau, agreed to meet for dinner, went through the beach club, and was quickly on the hotel's private beach. And that is the last time that anyone saw John Stonehouse alive.
John Stonehouse, MP, a high-profile politician who faced criminal charges. Stonehouse tears up the summons that's been tucked into his jacket. A tangled love life that gripped the tabloids.
I don't know. I'm just here to find out as much as you are. I'm sorry.
A secret that rocked three governments. Photos of Wilson, Callaghan and Thatcher.
He was under pressure from some people.
New evidence reveals how Stonehouse spied for the Soviet bloc while he was a minister.
The idea that I was a spy is ludicrous. Absolutely.
Covered up. Until now. Official papers, interview footage and photographs. The spy who died twice. Black and white footage.
John Stonehouse.
John Stonehouse.
John Stonehouse.
John Stonehouse climbed quickly towards positions of power in the Labour Party.
I was a great idealist in those days, and I thought the way to change things was to have political power along with others who felt the same way as I did.
During the 1960s, he was given a job in the Colonial Office.
I told the Africans to lift their heads high and behave as though the country belonged to them.
Then became Minister of Aviation.
My talks with the Czechs were exceptionally frank.
Postmaster General at the age of 43, with a beautiful wife, and talked about as a possible Labour Prime Minister of the future.
When Labour lost the general election in 1970, John Stonehouse held his seat, but was not offered a shadow cabinet post and decided to go into business as an export consultant.
The next 7 years, he believed, would make him rich enough to establish a financial independence, which he could re-enter full-time politics.
1974, London. Colour film of people crossing a busy street. A newspaper headline reads, Wilson back by a whisker. Outside number 10.
Right. 1974 was a very feverish time politically.
We have emphasised the gravity of the crisis Britain has been facing for the past year.
There'd been miners' strikes, the three-day week. The IRA bombing campaign was at its height. The Cold War was so potent in everybody's mind. And the air was thick with rumours about Soviet infiltration. This was a time of chaos, really.
David Lee, author of The Wilson Plot.
And the disappearance of Stonehouse was an astonishing saga that transfixed the attention of the newspapers.
Mrs. Barbara Stonehouse.
I saw him on the morning he left. He went off. He was in a very buoyant and sort of happy mood. He said he'd see me in 4 days' time. And that was it. And as far as I'm aware, there was nothing at all unusual about that.
The Houses of Parliament. Bernard Donoghue, Prime Minister's policy chief.
At that time, I was seeing the Prime Minister, Harold Wilson, every day. I went to see him in the study, and he then told me that John Stonehouse, a Labour MP, has gone missing. His clothes had been found, and there was no sign of him, so it was suggested that he had perhaps drowned.
Robin Butler.
I was in number 10 at the time of Stonehouse's
disappearance. John Stonehouse was quite a rising star during the 1960s, but there was always a bit of suspicion that this was odd, that the disappearance was not quite what it seemed.
Wilson was completely doubtful, even though Stonehouse had been one of the most promising of his young ministers. Harold Wilson's main reaction was, if he is gone, can we hold his seat? The party had only had a small majority after the recent election, and losing one mattered.
Papers rolling off the press. David Lee.
In 1974, I was a journalist on The Times, and almost as soon as the blaring headline started about his disappearance, stories questioning it began to creep in. Had he really disappeared, and were there not business troubles in the background? There was a sort of swell of puzzlement and mystery.
29th of November, Hampshire. Press are tightly huddled outside a front door.
Why have you been so sure that he drowned when others haven't been so sure?
Because of the evidence. They broke into his room and found everything there, all his belongings, his passport. And then they went down to the beach and found the clothes that he'd left were still there.
There is the suggestion, isn't there, that he may have disappeared on account of business interests going wrong.
We discount all that. It's just, I'm afraid, rubbish. And in a political family, we get used to all kinds of non-stories. They've done everything possible locally that they could do, and it must have been a drowning accident.
Barbara Stonehouse, 2nd of December, Miami Beach.
Is there any way he could have gone into the water without your seeing him?
No way.
And it's very flat, and you can see
flat.
A long way.
You can
way.
See anything for long distance, maybe, you know, a few miles out.
If he had been in any sort of trouble, you would have seen him waving or signaling.
I would have seen him.
In the meantime, the Missing Persons Bureau in Miami is building up a file on Mr. Stonehouse.
Our information, our actual direct information, started and stopped about 3:30 on November the 20th, when he was last seen in the Cabana area. We have, as much as possible, followed what leads we had before that time.
Rumor and speculation abounded. Financial troubles and even the mafia were talked about.
You see that this sort of whirlwind of mad theories.
Had he been murdered and put inside a concrete block found near Miami Beach?
It was at this warehouse that the grim discovery was made. The body, say police, could be that of Mr. Stonehouse.
This certainly is a mysterious thing that has happened here. And we're tracing down every lead that we can get, and we're getting a lot of information from British news media with regards to his background.
Lieutenant Jack Webb.
Then they discovered that his secretary had been installed in a flat unbeknownst to the wife, and that he was having a tremendous affair with her.
This so-called love triangle between his faithful wife, Barbara, and his faithful secretary, Sheila, added spice, of course, appealed to the sexism of the 70s.
Barrister Geoffrey Robertson. Now, David Lee.
From a tabloid journalist's point of view, this was like the most wonderful story in the world because every day brought fresh dramas and sensations.
His business interests had collapsed. There were rumours he'd been killed, even that he was a spy.
Barbara Stonehouse.
Today's press stories were just about rock bottom, how he could possibly have been working for the KGB and yet having it all established as sort of common knowledge around the House of Commons. My husband was a patriot, and his whole life has been devoted to working in public life for the public good. We've really felt that we were living in a kind of Walter Mitty land.
A defector had said that Stonehouse was a Czech agent.
Our targets were MI5, MI6, politics too, and of course, politics too.
Members of Parliament, civil
servants. Members of Parliament. People who had access to secrets.
The allegations that this defector made about Stonehouse were more than embarrassing for Wilson as Prime Minister, because he saw it as a stick to beat him with by his political opponents.
Normally, one doesn't ask governments to deny rumours, but I think that an exception should be made and that the rumour should be denied or confirmed.
Everything, when you put it together, in Wilson's mind, it would have justified him standing up and saying, in strong terms, there's nothing to this.
With permission, Mr. Speaker, I should like to make a statement on a security matter. These allegations were first made by a Czechoslovak defector in 1969. The security service advised me at that time that there was no evidence to support the allegations.
He would know the difference between saying there is no evidence and saying he was not a spy. What he was saying was he hadn't seen any evidence.
I have no information whatsoever about the disappearance of my right honourable friend.
The words of Harold Wilson, Prime Minister. December 19th, London. A presenter prepares to introduce an episode of Newsday featuring Barbara Stonehouse.
And in tonight's Newsday, an interview with Mrs. Barbara Stonehouse, wife or the widow of the Right Honourable John Stonehouse. One of many rumours about him was flatly denied this week by the Prime Minister, who told Parliament that Mr. Stonehouse was not a communist spy. Of the many other rumours about your husband, which strikes you as the most unfair?
To accuse a man of being a traitor to his own country was possibly as low as the press could get. Now my family are left with a man who they consider to be an honourable activist worker in public life for all kinds of public enterprises and good. And his memory has been absolutely besmirched and besmutted. And we are left powerless to do anything about it.
More newspaper stories with titles reading Stonehouse in Security Sensation, Mr. Stonehouse named a spy by defector, Missing MP was a spy, says Czech defector. Time rolls back to 1957. Prime Minister's private secretary, Robin Butler.
In the post-war period, after the Iron Curtain came down, there was always a risk of further world war. So Soviet bloc governments would try to recruit people from whom they could get secrets.
At that time, MPs spying for other countries was much more at the front of people's concerns, and it very much involved the Labour Party. Because on the whole, it was Labour MPs who were susceptible to approaches.
In 1957, John Stonehouse became a Labour MP.
I had these incredible ambitions. I think every young man going into politics has them.
I worked for Colonial Freedom. I believed that they should have their political freedom.
Would you agree that some of your speeches might be described as inflammatory?
No, of course not. Absolutely ridiculous suggestion.
Comrades, you can be really proud about the part the Labour movement has played in the transformation of the colonial territories into independent states.
Daniela Richterova.
The Soviet bloc countries, they were very interested in gaining a foothold into these new countries in Africa and wanted to keep the West out. Any kind of entry point into these new countries that was worth trying, and Stonehouse seems to be quite progressive. He was one of those entry points.
His name is highlighted.
Based on some of the best documented cases we have ever seen, because the Czech archives are just so good, what was happening in London during the Cold War at the Czechoslovak embassy was that they would throw parties, and these parties would be attended by genuine diplomats, but also by official cover spies.
The black and white exterior of the embassy.
In the Eastern Bloc, intelligence services are all deeply infiltrated by the KGB. All the work was effectively controlled from Moscow.
How many diplomats were there, and how many of them were spies, if you know what I mean?
It would be much shorter if I tell you who was not a spy.
That's a great breeding ground to try to recruit your assets. And so for them, meeting someone here in the UK during a cocktail conversation, actually very critical of the UK's colonial past. This was the lingo that the Soviets and the Czechoslovaks, the handlers, the intelligence officers themselves also use.
File 43075 in the Czech Security Services archive reveals that in 1959, they singled out Stonehouse.
The Czech files reveal an absolutely classic intelligence story in which intelligence agencies spend their time trying to find weaknesses in other people and dangling money in front of them in order to try and hook them in.
Black and white photographs of Vlado Kadelka, handler number one.
I had lunch with Stonehouse on the 19th of November. I have the impression you will accept the invitation at any time.
Kadelka's words.
These parliamentarians, you had to somehow befriend them. You had to then meet them at various locations and run them.
The Café Royal, then a handwritten note.
They start meeting John Stonehouse, and then they suggest that he could perhaps intervene on some issues.
In the attachment, we send you Jay Stonehouse's intervention on a Czechoslovak consulate in Nigeria. He agreed that he will receive a financial reward as a Christmas present. I suggest £50.
A handshake.
The moment you take money from someone who claims to be a representative of an adversarial power, I would be surprised if you didn't know better.
MPs were warned about the dangers of Eastern Bloc countries because that was the prevailing atmosphere of the time.
If people are giving you money, then you're under some sort of obligation to them, and it's not okay.
The recruitment of British Labour MP John Stonehouse was made. He accepted principles of conspiracy and agreed to obey by them. He makes many interpellations in Parliament to draw attention to himself. He's not driven by any one political concept he would fight for. He's more interested in becoming someone in public life.
He was a chancer, and he would make his career or make his money from wherever it suited him.
I will make sure that the annual average does not fall below £500. The amount will be associated with the quality of information. I have confirmed that he's scared of being compromised. This is a positive finding, as we could well use it in future.
At that point, he didn't have access to top secret information, so recruiting and meeting with John Stonehouse was an investment.
Two grainy black and white photos of Premysl Holan, handler number two.
The agenda to work on. More frequent meetings, ideally every 3 weeks. Colon should be given more tasks in Africa. He needs money before Christmas.
The Czechoslovak intelligence service didn't just throw millions of pounds at people. Every expense had to be kind of justified and was assessed and was discussed.
15th of November, 1961. Met at Lucullus restaurant on Mincing Lane. Colon provided short but valuable report on Tanganyika. Of December, he parked his car in Eden Street, Northwest 1, and £100 was placed report on the British political approach towards Katanga. Eden Street, £100. Intelligence about Kenya and Angola. Car parked on Tonbridge Street off Euston Road, Northwest 1, £200 left. Colon did not provide any more interesting information. He promised to deliver better service once he has moved further up the career ladder. I gave him £100 on leaving the restaurant.
It was two kinds of MPs. One, it was the left wing of Labour, who from early days had often been communists. And the other group were not these ideological spies. They were really opportunists who wanted money. Stonehouse was an opportunist in almost every political sense.
Miami Beach, 1974.
John Stonehouse disappeared at Miami Beach.
All the American police were left with was Stonehouse's clothes and his own passport, but no body.
Stonehouse's businesses had run up such enormous debts that he decided to take on a new identity.
He'd been travelling with false passports and the names of dead men from his constituency.
And fled to Australia.
Melbourne Airport.
He got the idea from Frederick Forsyth's thriller Day of the Jackal.
24th of December, Melbourne. A blank cheque in the name of Mr. J.A. Markham with a London address.
It was having two bank accounts in different names, Markham and Muldoon, that eventually put Melbourne police on his trail.
They cabled Scotland Yard and said, are you missing any of your establishment figures? Because this was manifesting as a very upper-class Englishman.
I wasn't aware that the Melbourne police had me under surveillance for some time.
They went to his flat and found a book of matches from the hotel in Miami Beach.
When we first saw him, he kept his assumed identity, but after we'd interviewed him, he then told us who he was and told us of his movements.
He was able to talk to his wife?
Yes.
This is a recording of the call.
Hello, darling. I'm with the Melbourne police, who've been very helpful. And I mean, in good heart, you would realise from all this that I've been deceiving you. I'm sorry about that. But in a sense, I'm glad it's all over.
Have you heard from Mr. Wilson, Mr. Stonehouse? I gather your wife is already on her way.
Stonehouse is detained as an illegal immigrant.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
The magistrate decided he must return for another week to the detention centre where he spent Christmas.
29th of December. The press had gathered round as Barbara Stonehouse gets out of a car.
Could I ask Mrs. Stonehouse when your husband is coming out?
I'm afraid I don't know. I'm just here to find out as much as you are. I'm sorry.
I know that he was under pressure from some people. And I would rather not comment any more than that on that at this stage, because I feel sure that Mr. Stonehouse will enlarge on this for you.
If Mr. Stonehouse were on the end of a telephone line from Australia to you now, what would you say to him?
I would tell him that he has my loyalty and that if there's anything I can do for him, I shall do it.
Sheila Buckley, John Stonehouse's secretary. The year switches from 1974 to 75. Stonehouse is surrounded by members of the press.
This is a waste of your time, you know. I'll talk to you across the road.
24th of March, Melbourne. A press conference.
If you die, and then you're dragged back again to your old self, it's one hell of an experience, and I had to recover from that.
Stonehouse tears up the summons that's been tucked into his jacket.
He did act in an extraordinary and grandiloquent way. Here he was, having escaped to Australia, facing all these criminal charges, and he thought he could beat the rap. He was not a very good businessman, that's for sure, but that didn't explain why he would disappear rather than face the music.
on top of all his business worries. A Czechoslovak defector, Major Joseph Frolik, had said the MP had been passing information to the communists. Being under suspicion was a shattering experience. He says that's what made him devise an escape from it all.
There has been a strong suggestion that in some way you've been linked with spying activity.
My relationships with the Czechs, I value. I like Czechoslovakia. I've had some very close connections there. But the idea that I was a spy is ludicrous. Absolutely.
As Stonehouse makes his way along a pavement, he's followed by a flock of photographers and reporters. A newspaper headline reads, Sheila flies out to Stonehouse. A reporter outside the Melbourne Magistrates Court.
Charges alleging criminal activities spread to involve his 28-year-old secretary, Mrs. Sheila Buckley.
But she kept insisting to friends that Stonehouse was dead. But she'd had telephone calls from him, and she'd also sent him semi-coded letters through one of his two Australian banks.
Stonehouse faces the press with a knowing smile.
They have brought five charges against her, which are ludicrous in the extreme. They concern checks.
Surely that's a matter for a court to decide.
No. It's a matter for public opinion to decide. There's no justice in England.
Black and white footage of the Houses of Parliament. The years roll back to 1964, and Wilson waves as he steps out of number 10.
When Harold Wilson first came in 1964, it wasn't as a left-wing socialist. It was as a moderniser. And he was very keen to promote younger Labour politicians who were more moderate. And to him, in the 60s, Stonehouse looked like one of those.
Stonehouse is appointed to the Ministry of Aviation.
I will say this. My talks with the Czechs were exceptionally frank. They were very frank with me in regard to their requirements.
A letter of congratulations from Wilson.
I do have this recollection of Stonehouse being a maverick, quite a charismatic maverick.
Robert Husak, handler number 3. Someone is typing up a report.
I bumped into him in the central lobby. I said, I understand his status has changed. He said, he can't afford any scandal.
There was a Czech agent, a man called Husak, who was over here with the Czech embassy. Certainly, any relationship I had with Husak was absolutely official.
It's either he was in some ways stupid and didn't realise he was at risk, or there was an arrogance and a conceit that made him think he was above the law, above the normal rules, and he could get away with anything.
Golon agrees to supply information regarding British government decisions in the matter of Germany, relations with the USA, and British policies regarding Africa. I propose to increase Colon's reward to £1,500 a year.
It was a cat and mouse game, and it was a relationship that sometimes went hot and sometimes went cold.
February, Colon did not attend. March, Colon did not attend. April, Colon did not attend. We set a date. If he doesn't come, I will go to his place of residence in Potter's Bar. I don't want it to become unpleasant.
What you're looking at is two sides, each trying to exploit the other whilst not trying to give away too much themselves.
Stonehouse is promoted to Minister of Aviation.
What we want to ensure, of course, is that the project teams on the ground get a spurt of enthusiasm from my trip.
1st of February, 1967. Boudoir, Fulham Road. His appointment as Minister of Aviation makes conspiring more complicated.
We actually see that running high-level agents is exceptionally difficult. Because he was going up the ladder, the stakes were getting higher.
He is renamed Agent Twister, Daniela Richterova.
And so they took these photographs with his handler, and they thought, this is material for when we do need to force him into giving them more information.
I met with him at the Chelsea Room, Carlton Tower Hotel. Then we went by taxi to the RAC club at his request, and he got really drunk, something he has never done before. He is deeply disillusioned with Labour's dismal position. He accepted his handover will happen. We said the extent of the cooperation is UK-Germany and UK-US relations, and he should make as much use of his relationship with Wilson as possible.
Stonehouse was paid £44,000 in today's money. In 1968, John Stonehouse is appointed Postmaster General. Carol Pravek, handler number four.
16th of July, 1968. He was at the embassy, but refused attempts for us to be alone. I saw him at the Labour Party conference. I apprehended him and told him it was his duty to contact me in Parliament. He refused to look at the defection of Czech security services staff, especially Frolík, needs to be taken into account.
Frolík defected to the United States, and the head of MI5 went to the Prime Minister and said he's implicated Stonehouse. We've got to do something about it.
1969.
As Postmaster General, my visits to Number 10 were infrequent. I was therefore surprised when I had a summons. Harold was standing up when I entered. "This is Elwell of Counterintelligence," he said. "There's been a statement made by a Czech intelligence officer who's defected to the West, in which you have been named as an informer. We must get to the bottom of this."
I can never remember that a prime minister would call in a member of his government with a member of the security service present and facing with the charges. So there were really serious grounds for concern.
Over the weeks, Elwell saw me several times, usually meeting me in the deep recesses of the RAC in Palmau.
They weren't in a dungeon with a light shining in Stonehouse's eyes. They were in a leather armchair at the RAC club.
Stonehouse had vehemently denied it. The security service themselves said that they had no evidence, and that was good enough for the Prime Minister.
1970. Stonehouse went free, but Frolík's testimony saw another Labour MP with the same Czech handlers go on trial.
Will Owen MP was accused of spying. He admitted receiving money from the Czechs, but said he'd given only unclassified information. The jury believed him. He was found not guilty of passing secrets.
20th of January, 1970. It has been impossible to contact Twister for over a year. He always feared exposure and interrupted cooperation. After the Owen case, he will never accept contact again. I suggest we put him in the archive.
The spy who died twice. 1975, 17th of July. A police convoy.
After months of confusion and legal wrangling, Mr. Stonehouse and his secretary were leaving Australia at last.
It had taken him some time to decide not to represent his constituents in Walsall North from the suburbs of Melbourne, but in the end he was brought back to England.
Sheila Buckley, his secretary and lover, came home with him.
I had a breakdown. And when the circumstances of the breakdown are clear for everyone to understand.
He was mentally upset, but not in a way that could provide a defence.
Press and police are waiting for Stonehouse as he leaves the plane, followed shortly after by his secretary and her escort. Geoffrey Robertson.
I was instructed to defend him. And first of all, to get him out of prison. Everyone recognized him. He had nowhere to go, no money, no passport. That had been confiscated. So Stonehouse received bail.
Going down to the House of Commons now, and I shall be seeing Mr. Speaker this afternoon.
The charges were coming up, and all the talk about him being a spy and him being a fraudster. And I remember particularly a year after the drowning nonsense, he was there for the opening of Parliament as if nothing had happened. And then, oddly, became part of the Westminster scene for another year.
Bernard Donoghue, 9th of February, 1976. Robin Butler.
We were still in the Cold War, and the allegations that Stonehouse was a Czech agent came back into Parliament.
I should like to take the opportunity of denying absolutely the allegation that has been made by Mr. Frolic. It is true that when I was a minister, and indeed before, I associated with communist agents. I did not know at the time that they were spies.
Stonehouse admitted he might have been wooed by the Czechs, but he denied he was ever a Czech agent.
6th of August.
At the Central Criminal Court in London, Mr. John Stonehouse, MP, pleaded not guilty to all 21 charges he faces at his trial, which began today. They involve forgery, theft, and conspiracy.
Stonehouse is said to have robbed his own company to pay Joseph Markham, a dead man from his Walsall constituency, whose identity he's alleged to have taken over with bogus passport and birth certificate. Money was said to have been moved by Mr. Stonehouse through 17 different banks and credit card companies around the world.
I told him, look, the jury will find, even if you're mad, that there's too much method in it to acquit you. It was quite a calculating and careful laying of plans to disappear.
Well, as this is a political trial, and I have no alternative but to defend myself.
I said, John, if you defend yourself, and I always had the sense that he might, because he was so determined to be sent a stage, you'll get 7 years, which he did.
He was convicted of theft, fraud and deception, was bankrupted and divorced. Sheila Buckley was also convicted.
Sheila gets out of a black cab.
One way or another, whether he resigns now as an MP or is expelled, his political career is over.
1978, 15th of May. Voice of Cranley Onslow, Conservative MP for Woking.
I believe that this House should have had by now full, satisfactory and sufficient inquiry by an impartial body into the question as to whether Stonehouse was or was not a Czech spy.
You had a little group of Tory politicians who were closely linked to the intelligence services. These people knew all about the Stonehouse case.
And we do since know that Stonehouse's word is not a word to be relied upon. So you read Stonehouse's book, and you read the chapter entitled The Czech Spy Story. And if you're an idiot, you think there's nothing more to it than appears in that chapter. But all efforts to try and persuade the Prime Minister to have a proper and systematic inquiry have ended in obfuscation and confusion.
The motivation would have been that if this man was a spy, he ought to be unmasked as a matter of dealing seriously with people who had betrayed the interests of the country.
21st of June.
The situation has changed in the following ways. In 1974, there was no collateral. Stonehouse is now known to be a liar. Stonehouse has dealt in his book with his Czechoslovak contacts in a way that arouses some suspicion. A second Czech defector has also said that he thinks that Stonehouse was a spy.
Callaghan, now Prime Minister, is pushed to respond to Tory calls for an inquiry.
Callaghan had been Home Secretary, which Wilson hadn't been, and that meant he'd been in charge of security services. He'd also been Foreign Secretary, where one is aware of spying we do as well as receive.
It's striking that what he did first, as the files now reveal, is he had Wilson in and said, did any of this actually happen? Is it true?
Words of John Hunt.
The Prime Minister saw Sir Harold Wilson in the cabinet room alone. Sir Harold Wilson said that he did not recall ever seeing Stonehouse about this matter. He did say, however, that in 1970, he told Stonehouse that he did not intend to give him an opposition front bench appointment. Sir Harold Wilson added that it appeared that Mr. Stonehouse was corruptible.
Wilson later on was heard to say that he didn't think Stonehouse was necessarily a spy, but he'd always known he was a crook. Which is a pretty startling thing to say about somebody you've made a minister.
The Prime Minister told Sir Harold Wilson that the Tories were making trouble on this.
18th of July. Thatcher, now leader of the Conservatives, takes on her backbencher's cause. Robin Butler.
Callaghan had a meeting with Margaret Thatcher and really tried to establish whether she would press for there to be a prosecution of Stonehouse.
It was quite skillful of Callaghan getting in the new leader of the opposition, Mrs. Thatcher, and speaking to her on Privy Council terms, i.e. they were going to have a conversation between the top chaps who'd all been sworn to keep the nation's secrets.
If it was a matter of state security, they should talk to the leader of the opposition, and they did it because, in a way, it traps the opposition in.
Under the Official Secrets Act, prosecution would only be successful if you could identify actual secrets that Stonehouse had given away.
Callaghan was able to say to Mrs. Thatcher, look, you know, Frolic said all these things at the time, and nothing to see here. And she told her colleagues that, you know, I've had these conversations with the Prime Minister, there's nothing to it. So Callaghan quite skillfully defused the issue again.
1979.
Mr. Stonehouse has been released on parole licence until 1981. He had applied for parole last year but was turned down. He's still recovering from open-heart surgery following 3 heart attacks since his sentence for theft, fraud and deception. And when the moment of freedom finally came after 3 years in jail, Mr. Stonehouse sprinted towards the car to make an undignified departure hidden under a coat on the back seat.
His secretary, Sheila Buckley, stood by him. On his release, they married.
1980, 7th of July. Margaret Thatcher enters number 10 Downing Street, then heads up a flight of stairs followed by her husband, Dennis. Words of Robert Armstrong, Cabinet Secretary.
New information has now become available from a new defector. He claims to have been Mr. Stonehouse's controller and claims to have taken over from Robert Husak. He says that Mr. Stonehouse was a conscious paid agent and had provided information about government plans and policies. The Attorney General said that he was sure that Mr. Stonehouse had been a spy for the Czechoslovaks, but he had no evidence which he could put before a jury.
When finally all these suspicions were confirmed that a defector had turned up and said, yes, he was working for us for ages and ages and had a lot of money, it's remarkable to see that Mrs. Thatcher decides to suppress it. Let sleeping dogs lie.
The Prime Minister said that matters should be left as they were.
Stonehouse gets a round of applause as he walks out on set to join Russell Harty on his chat show.
It's a strange story. What regrets do you harbour?
Well, regrets. I think that one certainly does regret, when one looks back, that one was so much of an idealist in one's political work and not more of a realist.
There was a story about you being possibly a Czech spy. How did that
Yes, occur? Well, there was this awful story that appeared saying that I was a Czech spy. And the press went to town on it. Mm. And Harold Wilson, then Prime Minister, stood up in the House of Commons and said that it was absolutely untrue.
You're actually writing or have written a novel?
Yes.
It's very, very amusing to be able to knit together some of the things that I know about from the inside and put them into a thriller.
1988, BBC News.
John Stonehouse,
the former Labour minister who caused an international sensation when he faked his own death by drowning but then turned up in Australia,
has died at the age of 62. He had a heart attack at his home near Southampton. His widow, Sheila, said he was a one-off.
John Stonehouse didn't take legal action against claims he was a spy in his lifetime. The Czech government's 500-page intelligence file on Stonehouse confirms him as the only known minister to have worked for an adversarial power. Julia Stonehouse disputes the veracity of the file and maintains her father wasn't a spy.
Mm-hmm.